Anyway, I'm jazzed because...
Good for you, man.
Yeah, I'm jazzed.
I'm coming to this from more of a mellow place because I've been rewatching. I know it's a TV series, but I've been rewatching the TV series Normal People. You know, the Sally Rooney novel adapted, and it's got...
By the book of the same name.
What's the guy? What's your guy's name?
It's not called Sally Rooney, is it? It's called Normal. It's called Normal People.
It's called Normal Sally Rooney.
Right.
Paul Mescal. And then what? I was going to ask you about this actually, because the woman's name, the
Daisy
actor,
Daisy Edgar Jones.
Daisy Edgar Jones, who is? I don't know if you've seen the show. She's exceptionally good in this series. Do you know what? It's really great. I'm so happy I'm rewatching it again. It's a really fantastic coming of age sort of story, and it's one of those ones where, do you know, sometimes you watch stuff about young people and you just can't get over how young they seem, and the stakes seem so low because they're young and they just don't realize it. This TV, it's a perfect balance of allowing you to observe them as quite young people, inexperienced, making these silly mistakes, and then also really be moved by it and be sort of brought into it. But I had a look at her IMDb afterwards because I thought she must have gone on to do some great things that I just haven't seen. She's barely done anything since then, and she's not been in. She doesn't have any upcoming projects and isn't listed in anything from 2025. I don't know if you know anything about her story, but she's so great.
Well, she's playing her cards very close to her chest. She did Twisters.
Right.
Which I saw her in. And then I think she did some Crawdads flick.
Oh, did she do the Crawdads one?
Welcome to the Crawdads, which was fairly middlingly received. But she's very good in Twisters, but Twisters is a very silly, nothing of a movie. She just can do whatever she wants. And so she's picking...
Really?
She did a Bucky Barnes movie. He's not called Bucky Barnes. Sebastian Stan.
Right.
An indie flick called Fresh. And I think it's a saucy, odd, there's cannibalism involved. It was very well
that
received.
That was 2022.
Right. It didn't make lots of noise, but I think it was well regarded. And so she's just, I think she realizes she's pulling together a little repertoire of stuff and like, you know.
Interesting. Because Normal People's 5 years ago now. And you know what I get like when I look at IMDb scores, Adam? You don't always see them the same way that I do. But I worry when I look at her IMDb since Normal People because she's only been in a couple of things that have had over 7 stars. One of them was a random TV miniseries. Where the Crawdads Sing is the other one, 7.2. Everything else, including Fresh that you just talked about, all under 7. And I just thought she was so good in that. I want to see her become a big star.
But like, maybe she's not a star. Maybe she's a quality actress. I mean, I think maybe she.
But where's
she? Doesn't
what's she in? That's like.
But she probably doesn't want to do like. She's got the what's her name Daisy Ridley conundrum.
Yeah.
You know, everyone just knows her for Star Wars, and so she's got to like buckle down, pick the right flicks, and the right directors, and maybe she'll shake free of Star Wars.
Yeah, maybe. They've both got the Daisy conundrum.
The Daisy conundrum. I think that's what it's called. It's called the Daisy conundrum.
The Daisy chain conundrum. Is there another Daisy we can add to the chain?
Daisy May Cooper. She's got to shake this country.
Daisy May Cooper. Yeah. She's tried really hard to shake it, but I think the trick is to do something that's really good afterwards.
I think it's just, the trick is just being good stuff.
You know what they both really need is to sort of find a good solid vehicle, like a sort of cheaper of the dozen sort of thing, and just hop on board, you know, just hop on board the cheaper of the dozen train.
How dare you try and introduce the main topic
what?
Of the conversation?
What?
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host. And Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hi, welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, the host, Adam Richmond. This is the show in which we chat about the movies, or films, sometimes we talk about films, that we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. here he is, joining me as ever, Mr. Hi, Mr. He'd love to be the host, but he isn't anymore because he fucking ruined it. Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello there, all right.
How did you ruin being host?
I think you ruined me being host, and then for the sake of our friendship and for the better running of the show, we decided that it would be okay, it would be better if you were sort of like a beta cuck host, and that I...
Yeah, that, yeah, the it was the illusion of,
Yeah.
You can drive.
You drive. Yeah, I don't even have a driving license, you know. Mm. Just so happens that I'm excellent at driving, like Colin McRae.
That's a really...
Do you remember Colin McRae?
Yeah, really vaguely. Yeah. That's a very, very... Well, what a deep cut. What a deep cut. On today's episode, we are doing the 2003 comedically inclined family caper flick Cheaper by the Dozen, directed by Sean Levy, starring Stevie Martin and Bonnie Hunt. It's a not too shabby 98 mins. I think you could shave off 8 mins easy.
Of course.
But here's the letterboxed. The more, the scarier. That's the bit in caps. I don't know. I would have gone, family.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah.
The Baker brood moves to Chicago after patriarch Tom, that's Steve Martin, gets a job coaching football at Northwestern University, forcing his writer wife Mary.
Yeah.
What if are you married? Yeah. I've got a wife. What's she do? She's a writer. She's my writer wife. Writer wife Mary. That's Bonnie Hunt. And the couple's 12 children to make a major adjustment. The transition works well until work demands pull the parents away from home, leaving the kids bored and increasingly mischievous.
Oh, no.
It's not a great letterboxed. It's one of the middling ones. It's not the
They've
worst.
They've really tried to ham it up a bit, haven't they? You know, unnecessarily, I'd say. The headline here is family has 12 kids and it's too many. That's the headline.
Well, also, and the subheadline is it's based on the book of the same name, isn't it? I think it's based on a real book. It's based on the book of the same name, you know. It's based on a real family. It's based on the book of the same name.
But there was a film in the 1950s that was called Cheaper. I think this is a remake of a 1950s film.
I'm going to admit something, Joe.
I don't know.
I'm convinced that this movie is based on a real family. And I'm going to have to check. I'll just check.
Hold on.
Okay, you check. I'm convinced that this was based on... Because if not, hats tipping off to Cheaper by the Dozen.
Okay. Cheaper by the Dozen is a semi-autobiographical novel written by Frank Butler Gilbreth Jr.
Right.
And Ernestine Gilbreth Carey, published in 1948. The novel recounts the author's childhood lives growing up in a household of 12 children. The best-selling book was later adapted into a feature film by 20th Century Fox in 1950, followed up by the sequel in 1950, Bells on Their Toes, and that was adapted in 1952. So it is based on a sort of true story, but that true story did happen about 100 years ago. And then the film that we watched is really just a sort of remake of a film from 1950.
Because I paid attention to the credit sequence, which is very 1990s. And I just thought, oh, this is based on the book of the same name, and it's a couple in the 90s.
And it's one of those films where the book is in the film that the film is based on. The book, like, it's one of, we've been in those sort of meta cycles before, haven't we? But no, it isn't that.
It's not Marley and Me. I thought it was like Marley and Me, and I thought we were watching... actually, do you know what? They've really done a lovely little bit of business with the material.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the fun thing of today's episode. Many episodes ago, we did a Gladiator episode. Now, Gladiator is one of Joe's favourite movies. And the funniest thing about that episode is that I didn't let Joe know if I enjoyed rewatching it or not. Now, Cheaper by the Dozen is Joe's second favourite movie. And I'm not going to let him know what I think of the movie until later. Maybe we'll get to the end. I had to spill the beans mid Gladiator.
It's good.
I'll end up spilling the beans. So that's what we're going to do today.
Can
as
I
well.
Tell you what I think then? At the beginning, can I tell you what I think?
You can tell me what you think. What do I think of this movie? Cheaper by the Dozen.
Wait, you want me to tell you what I think you think?
Oh, no, both. Tell me what
I
you
want
think.
To tell you what I think.
Oh, great. Do that first.
I was thinking, though, that I wonder if the reason why this isn't really in the canon at all is maybe just because it's a very safe film. It doesn't do really anything new. It takes a genre that exists already and a style of film that exists already, and it does a perfectly good job with it, with some very funny people in. And I will say, some quite impressive child acting. Not all of them, but one or two of them I think are really good. Like they give some great line readings. But it doesn't really do anything new, and so it never really became that culturally relevant. You know, I think maybe that's why it's not in the canon, because it's not talked about ever, is it? I mean, it's finished. Like, no one ever thinks about this film, except maybe me.
I mean, have you seen Parenthood?
No, what is that?
That's a Steve Martin starring film, which is about a family, an intergenerational family, and it is light years ahead of this film. It's
right.
I was going to try and think of a really clever. It's like it's The Godfather. Parenthood is The Godfather, and Cheaper by the Dozen is
Casino.
No, it's probably more like Juice Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Oh, right. I think you're giving away what you think of the film.
Oh shit! Have I just given it away? No. That's
you
me.
Might have done.
I like Juice Bigelow, Male Gigolo, actually.
No, you don't.
I did. I quite enjoyed it. You know, I still might like Cheaper by the Dozen.
Okay.
I'm going to say some really nice things about Cheaper by the Dozen.
Great.
Before I tip my hand.
Tell me.
Bonnie Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic in this flick. And I mean, I'm a family man. I'm a father. So this film should be in my wheelhouse. I should be getting what the journey is. What this film does get right about families, and really the interesting notions in it they've got loads of kids. That's just a silly hook. It's irrelevant. They could have three kids. They could have two kids. For this, it's 12. What's interesting is what it's about is the work-life balance of the father and the mother, and they're both very successful. Steve Martin plays an American football coach, which doesn't make any sense at all. It's like really, really miscast. I love Steve Martin, but he doesn't make any sense in
that
role.
All the American college football coaches look exactly like Steve Martin. They all look really unassuming.
But I just don't believe him for a minute.
Fair enough.
It was a real big stumbling point for me. For some reason, I enjoyed him, but they should have. Why did they make him an American football coach? I thought he was an American football coach because it was based on the book of the same name, and it was just something they invented. But so, and then Bonnie Hunt is a writer, and she's written this parenting book, which is Cheaper by the Dozen, and she gets to go on a book tour. So there's this lovely, and what it gets so well is Bonnie Hunt has a choice between finally having a bit of a career and going on a book tour and the worry of leaving her family and missing her kids, but then also wanting to do that as well. And the film really, really does that quite well. And Steve Martin has to hold things together, and he is really supportive. It feels quite progressive in that way. He's very supportive. He never questions her. They never argue about whether she should have gone or not. And he's got to juggle his responsibilities while the wife is away. I really, really liked that about this film.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy. The well-observed stuff is about 10%. The rest of the film, 90% of the film, is fucking hijinks. Pathetic hijinks. A frog falling in scrambled eggs. Fuck off. I fucking hate hijinks. Yeah. This is not comedy. I think the note
I did worry
is...
about the frog when it fell in the scrambled eggs, because I thought, like, God, that frog's going to boil itself alive. You ever put your finger in the middle of some scrambled eggs when they've just been cooked? Christ, man, it's like hot on the center of the sun in there. That frog dead instantly. No wonder it dies later in the film. It's death of, related to burns.
Well, that's the philosophical thing about a frog. It's like, if you throw a frog into a boiling hot vat of scrambled eggs, it will jump out. But if you pop it in a bowl of, cracked cold eggs.
Egg mix, yeah.
And slowly heat it up, he'll love it. He's having a lovely egg bath and... You got yourself.
Isn't that a crab?
No, it's a frog.
Is it a frog?
It's a frog, yeah. It's a frog. Oh, it's right. The famous thing is it's a frog and scrambled eggs.
Is that really the famous thing?
Yeah, it is.
Not the scrambled eggs bit. I know the thing you're referring to. Is it actually a frog?
Yeah, it's frog. It's a frog and water. It's a frog and boiling water.
Frog and boiling water. Is it really?
Yeah, I mean,
I won't Google it. I won't disrespect you.
You shouldn't, but I did used to work for the RSPB. This film is for children and for people without children. That's my main issue with it.
Right. It's not for parents.
It's not for people, for parents who have children. If you watch it, you just think, this is nonsense. And it is nonsense. There is, aside from these couple of wonderfully well-observed moments that are in the script, it's for people who've got no fucking notion of what it is to be a parent, because kids don't talk like this, and the reality is it's just like, but you like it because you don't have kids, so you kind of think, oh yeah, this is fun, I like this, this is fun. Watch Parenthood, mate. Parenthood is a fucking masterpiece. It's so good.
Yeah. Let me just say, though, I did watch it in the evening after some children who had stayed at my house for the night before and then some of the day had been over. So in a sense, I kind of was a sort of parent for the day. Not claiming that's the same as having kids, year round, week round, whatever. But there were children of the ages 12 and 8 in my home for over 12 hours in the lead up to this film. So I think that gives me some sort of a credibility, some sort of... it's like I should have a certificate. Do you know what I mean? To stamp that says, yeah, you've sort of been a parent for a bit. You can watch this film... And you'll be able to tell whether kids say things like this or not. Do you know, don't say that to be offensive or disrespectful to you as a parent.
No.
But like, what I'm saying is I basically am a parent because I had kids in my house for overnight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get that. But it's not just how the kids talk. It is more that how it appeals to the notion of how you would want to raise kids. And it's very much like kids... raise themselves. Let's all have it's all about hijinks and letting them run free and looking after themselves and not fussing. It's of the whole film, and the message is don't fuss, because they move to this new house and who should arrive but a very, very fussy set of parents, and these criminals have only got one kid. What a fucking pair of losers. They've only got one kid. What horrible people. And the mum is, they've made this mum, she's so woundly tight, she can't let go of her little boy. And then as soon as the little boy can go and have fun and rumble tumble and roustabouts,
he likes it,
he loves it.
Yeah,
it's a fantasy.
The thing is, people don't understand that, do they? Like you and me do as parents. We both get we understand it is I watched it and thought the same thing as well. And a lovely fantasy, a very watchable, enjoyable, well-crafted fantasy. But I people who aren't parents don't understand this, do they? Not like you and me.
I think the fucking Bakers are the epitome of this disgusting American capitalism of like, let's churn out more kids. What about the fucking planet? Every kid you have, you're killing the planet. And it's they're like pictured as this wholesome, loving, lovely, amazing people. And it's like, no, you're a bunch of fucking selfish assholes spewing out kids, not really looking after them. And all of these kids are just sucking the lifeblood out of the earth. And the film never engages in that topic, and it really wound me up.
Brrr.
Yeah, sorry. Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello, sorry?
Hi there. Is that...
Sorry, the line's not so good. Hello?
Oh, who is sorry. You don't sound like... Is Miss Hunt there?
Yes, this is Mrs. Bonnie Hunt. Hello?
Oh, this is she. You?
Yeah, this is she. Bunny, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
Hi there. I'm calling... Hi, I'm... my name's Joe Devine. And...
From the TIFO podcast.
Yeah, you know about that, do you?
You're joking. Are you calling me up? Are you calling up? What? How? Is this a prank?
Wait, are you a soccer fan? Are you? Is it or
we? I call it football. Come on, I know.
Sorry,
Mr. Joe Devine calling up me, little old Bonnie Hunt. What do I owe the pleasure?
This is Bonnie Hunt from the film Cheaper by the Dozen, right? Yeah, the same.
You're familiar with my work.
Yeah, of course. That's why I'm calling.
What can I do you for?
To what do you owe the pleasure? And it's a good question, Bonnie.
No, I didn't say that. No, I didn't say that. I just said, what can I do you for?
What can you do me for? Well, it's a good question, Bonnie. Miss Hunt, it's a good question.
No. Call me Bonnie.
Call you Bonnie? Great stuff, Bonnie. Listen, Bonnie, I've just watched Cheaper by the Dozen, and I just wanted to call you. I didn't know you'd know me. That's a great pleasure and a surprise. I just wanted to call you to tell you that I thought that your performance in the film Cheaper by the Dozen was magical and captivating.
Well, that's just such a joy to be called up by a fan, and not just any fan.
Well, while I've got you, let me ask you, what happened to your career, Bonnie? Because you were sort of, I guess Cheaper by the Dozen was maybe really like the biggest thing that you did in some ways, you know, the biggest opportunity for you. And you're so charming in it. I just expected you to have a bigger career thereafter, and you didn't really. Was that a sort of personal choice, or what happened for you?
That's a great question. There is no personal choice when you're a woman in Hollywood, Joe.
Right.
You really just get the roles that are doled out to you. Even as a young actress, I was never considered beautiful, even though I'm probably one of the most beautiful women around.
Yeah,
I mean, in that way, I'm sort of like an inner beauty. I mean visually, but like I know I'm not Angelina Jolie, but I'm gorgeous.
You're incredibly captivating. Yeah, you're a fantastically captivating screen, and you're very funny, so you know the whole package is so watchable, I think.
Right, thanks. And like Angelina Jolie, she's a vacuum. She's got nothing. She's got no...
Yeah, she's not funny at all.
Funny. Like, and I glow.
I think if you were in Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Brad Pitt, I think that would have been a better film.
Well, I got put forward for the auditions. And I read really well. Me and Brad, we got on like a house on fire. But I've never been a big name, and I'm just talent, and I would get sister roles. I'd be the sister, I'd be the pal, I'd be the amusing buddy. That's another word for pal.
Sometimes, right?
Sometimes the wife. You know, I'm never even if I'm the main wife to the main guy. What am I? I'm in like three scenes. I'm never the star.
Like in The Green Mile, that's the case, isn't it? Yeah. And yet you've got the chops to stand up opposite Robin Williams in Jumanji, you know, because you've got the comedy chops, haven't you?
I mean, I think that's probably one of my highlights. I'm really good in that flick. Really good. Because there's so much chaos going on in that flick, and yet I ground it with wit and charm, and like, you know, there's a fucking stampede of rhinoceros.
Yeah.
And you just go with it because of me. So that's, you know, it's just not my fault, you know, and as women, we age out, you know, never mind wives, we just don't get cast anymore. And unless it's a fucking...
I guess that's one of the reasons why, is it... Were you going to say an animated film just then?
No, I was going to say, unless it's Efron calling. Efron calling?
Right.
And she's not. She's not calling. Wait, once a fucking decade. Good luck.
Mm.
In another lifetime, I'm Sandra Bullock. Am I wrong?
No, I think if you were born 10, 15 years later, you could have been Sandra Bullock. Maybe the world wasn't ready for what you had to bring. Maybe you are the watershed just before there were those one or two extra opportunities, and then after Sandra Bullock there were one or two more, and maybe you are the one, you know, that got sort of held behind the curtain a bit more.
I mean, yeah, what's that figure of speech? I walked so Sandra Bullock could run.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the
specific. Sandra Bullock ran so that Daisy Edgar Jones could just sort of hang around and wait to pick the project that she wanted to do.
Thanks, Joe and Alan, for requesting that I read Robert Frost's The Road Not Taken. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that passing there, had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves, no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that's made all the difference.
Let's just, you've got to play your silly game now. Come on, like the game you invented. Play 6 degrees of, hello, I'm Kevin Bacon. Can we play Kevin Bacon?
I've got a new name for it now. It's called Best Me Bacon. Would you like to play Best Me Bacon?
Oh, I'd love to play Best Me Bacon. I haven't signed off on the name. I think,
Well, what do you think? Live signing? It came because last week I was thinking what we are sort of calling it the bacon game, but really it's not, is it? Because the game element of it is that you have to beat me. Well, I'll explain the rules while you're thinking about whether to sign off on that title or not.
Well, it should be because like beat my bacon.
Beat my bacon. So I did think of that, but it's a bit too sexual. I don't know if we want it to be.
No, that's exactly.
Do we want? I think, isn't it fun for the sexual stuff to be like in, woven in sort of subtly, but for us to be able to hold the hands up and say, hey, that's just going to happen sometimes. If we have a segment called beat my bacon, that feels. I feel like we've crossed the weird sex line, you know? But you don't think so?
It's just amazing. It's just fascinating to see where our tastes diverge. You think that's too sexual. Yeah, fine, that's too sexual. Email us.
Beat my bacon.
moviesyouforgot@gmail.com. Is the segment name Beat My Bacon too sexual or not sexual enough? Or... Best me bacon.
It's which more like lacking like, class.
Yeah. It sounds like a not. Ooh, best me bacon. Ooh, who can you best me bacon? No, I don't. Yeah. Best your
can
bacon.
You best me bacon. That's that. Well, anyway, let's play best me bacon today, and then maybe next week, if the audience say it's all good, we'll play beat my bacon.
Go on, beat my bacon.
Anyway, here's how the game works, right? It's the Kevin Bacon game, 6 degrees of separation. I give Adam, just before the episode started, I gave Adam the names of two actors, and Adam has to find movie connectors between these two actors. Now, the trick is he doesn't have to find the shortest possible route in all of routes. He simply has to beat me, but he doesn't know how many films it's taken me. So, Adam, today, the actors I gave you just before the episode started were Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Jamie Bell. Now, how did you do this? Because you told me already that you have resolved it. You resolved it before we started. Well, I thought this was quite hard. Tell me about your route.
First off, the first bit of this game is always, what are the names you're picking? And you have... I mean, I think it's too harsh to say you've fucked it. Sometimes, once or twice maybe, you've given one that's too easy. And I think, but there was never any... malice in that, you know, malice. just, you know, you just, it's just an accidental fuck up when you fucked it up. Like, oh, that was too easy. Don't beat yourself up. This is a great pairing. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, you know, she's mainly telly, but she's been in movies.
She's been in some movies.
Jamie Bell, he's always about, but not really about.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. So instantly, if I think of Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I always think of that flick she's in with James Gandolfini, Enough Said.
Enough Said, yeah.
I don't think she's been in loads of other things. Certainly not that I'm familiar with. I think, she was in that remake of Force Majeure with Will Ferrell. I don't even know what it was called. But I didn't write that down. She was in The Thunderbolts, which I've seen recently, which is a Marvel. So that opens all kinds of doors. You've got Pew, you've got Sebastian Stan. But once I've written down Enough Said and Gandolfini is my gateway to all kinds of things. I can pop her on the side. Because you know what Gandolfini's in?
What's he in?
He's in True Romance. And True Romance is fucking littered with every single actor you could ever possibly want.
That's true.
I leave that over there and I go, Jamie Bell, fuck, what's Jamie Bell in? And this is where, you know, you had an old rule where we had to play a film that we'd talked about. Now, this is where that would have been amazing because Jamie Bell has been in Jumper.
Yeah, of course.
And that's the only interesting thing he's been in. He's been in Fantastic Four.
It's the most oft-mentioned film on this podcast, I would say, Jumper. It's come up since we did the episode, it's come up almost every single week in one way or another, usually in the box office game. But yeah, you're right. Jamie Bell was in that, driving a bus through the desert.
So I'm like, oh, he's in that. He's in Billy Elliot. That's no use. Fantastic Four. You got Miles Teller in that. You got Michael B. Jordan. But here's my route. It's Jumper all the way. Jumper. I was thinking Hayden Christensen, but then I thought, hang on a sec. No, I've got Samuel L. Jackson. And if I've got Samuel L. Jackson, I've got the keys to the kingdom. So you've got Jamie Bell is in Jumper with Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel L. Jackson is in Pulp Fiction with Christopher Walken. And Sir Christopher Walken is in True Romance with James Gandolfini. And James Gandolfini is in Enough Said with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. So that's that four.
It's a lovely route. Yeah, that's four. That's a very nice route.
I think there's three. There's probably a three, but, I wanted
there's
to do it
quick.
There's
several twos, it turns out, according to the Oracle of Bacon. Legit twos, I think you'll agree. But you didn't beat me, but I didn't beat you. I got four as well. And amusingly, I did also use the film Enough Said to get to James Gandolfini. This is the first thing that popped into my head with Julia Louis-Dreyfus. But instead of going True Romance, I went through the film The Drop with Tom Harvey, James Gandolfini was in.
Love
and then Hardy, do you remember, was in that terrible film about the craze, Legend, that had Taron Egerton in it, who is, of course, in Rocket Man with Jamie Bell. That's the only Jamie Bell film you didn't mention, the more recent one. He plays Elton John's writing partner. I forget his name.
Bernie Taupin,
there you go.
Bernie Taupin. That's a really great route. Really great route. Top work. How long did that take you?
4 minutes, I think. Something like
lovely.
That. Not so bad.
Lovely business.
You'll have to tell me whether these are legit or not. There's a couple of different routes through the same Julia Louis-Dreyfus film, if you want to do this in two. She was apparently in Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
Yeah, she pops up.
So she's in the film. She's in that film with Michael B. Jordan. She's also in that film with Sean Roberts. Sean Roberts was in Jumper with Jamie Bell. She was in
Sean Roberts.
There's other legit ones. Hold on.
Wait a sec. Michael B. Jordan in Black Panther Wakanda Forever, and Michael B. Jordan goes straight to Fantastic Four with Jamie Bell.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
That's the
So forget
right
Sean
there.
Roberts.
But there's also Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in Onward with Octavia Spencer, who's in Snowpiercer with Jamie Bell.
We're not doing animated voices.
Okay. What about this? Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in Enough Said with Lenny Loftin, who's in Flags of Our Fathers with Jamie Bell.
No, who the fuck is Lenny Loftin?
Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in You People with Lauren London, who's in Tom Clancy's Without Remorse with Jamie Bell.
No.
Bonjour. Nice sweater.
Thank you.
tell you what I love about Cheaper by the Dozen.
Another thing you love about it?
Yeah, the musical cues. I love the musical cues of Cheaper by the Dozen. There's a lovely montage when the kids, they're not having a great time. It's really confusing because you're like, oh, I don't know what's going on here. Are they having a good time or not? But just in case you're confused, the music kicks in. I'm just a kid, and life is a nightmare.
I'm just a kid, I know that you don't care. No other world is unknown in the world, and having more fun than me.
I mean, is that a real song?
I love that song. Yeah,
is it a real song?
By the band Simple Plan. I think it was their only hit, Simple Plan.
Oh, no, Simple Plan are great. I like Simple Plan.
It was their only big hit, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, but they've got loads of fucking... I'm into that. Let me look at... I'm actually into a decent Simple Plan stuff. That's not Simple Plan. Are you telling me? I'm just a kid. Fuck, it is.
I thought this film had a good soundtrack.
Oh, no. I don't like Simple Plan. I think I like some... Oh, I'm thinking about Saves the Day. I like Saves the Day.
You like Complex Plan.
No, I like Saves the Day. Saves the Day. Simple Plan can fuck off.
I was a bit surprised that you said you like Simple Plan.
No, I don't. And then, and just in case, there's another moment in the film where one of the characters is a little bit in too deep.
Hilary Duff's the worst thing about the film, right?
She's Duff. She's always been Duff. She always will be Duff. She stinks.
Well, I'm not saying that. But I do think it's quite interesting, actually, when you have films that have a range of different ages of actors in. I like to think this about Emma Watson. I know we talked about her last week or a couple of weeks ago when we did Little Women and how she's not terrific in that film. Emma Watson's sort of acting a journey was fascinating to observe as she sort of aged through Harry Potter, because she got a lot better, but also there's a middle period where she's actually worse than she is in the earlier films. You expect 11-year-old children to not be very good at acting. You expect that if they've been acting a lot for a few years, when they're 14, they'll be better and they'll just keep getting better. Weirdly, Emma Watson was like quite bad at 11, really bad at 14, and then better when she got a bit older. But when she was 14, she just started to do this like incredible sort of overacting thing, you know, and it became very difficult to watch in some of those Harry Potter films. In the case of Cheaper by the Dozen, some of the children, I would say around the ages of sort of 12 to 14, that the actors are excellent. Like some of them, little Sarah, little Jake, like their line readings are really, really funny. They absolutely nail the tone. I've not seen that many better comic performances from some kids like in this movie. But Hilary Duff, I think it's a bit unfortunate that at the age that she is, presumably that's around like between 18 and 24 or something like that, her performance is very off tone. Like it really doesn't match with a lot of what else is going on in the movie. She's a big name at the time, and so she's part of the draw, presumably, for the younger family members who are going to want to see this movie as well. But I wonder if she did it 5 years earlier or 5 years later, she probably would have worked quite well. But at the age she is in this film, it's just weird and shit.
Yeah, she thinks she's a good actor, and she thinks she's a grown-up. She thinks she's a grown-up. And the reason why the other kid actors are doing what you call good performances, it's all in the fucking blooper reels at the end. It's because you see how he gets the director, Sean Levy, who we need to talk a bit about. Sean Levy. He basically just puts a camera on these kids and just shouts at them and says, "Hey, they're gonna do it again." And the kids are like, "I'm bored. I'm bored." He's like, "Yeah, no, try it one more time. Look more angry." And their acting is for like seconds. It's like for a 2 second line reading. And it's all in the edit. They're dog shit. Old Lizzie McGuire, she thinks, no, I'm an actor like Ashton Kutcher.
I'm a proper actor. I can do it. Yeah.
I can do it and I can do proper long reads. And it's like, no, you can't. That's why you've never been seen ever though, again.
If she was 5 years older, she could have, I think she would have done a decent job of the Piper Perabo part.
No, because Piper Perabo can do that, and she's proven that she can.
She's Duff, proven it.
Duff's done nothing.
Right, right.
She's a dead horse.
Have you seen Cheaper by the Dozen too?
I contemplated watching that for this, and then I thought, do you know what? I've given Joe the gift of this episode. I'm not going to watch this fucking piece of shit with Eugene Levy, where what they just. The premise is they fight another family with loads of kids. Piss off.
There's a Yours, Mine. Well, isn't there another film? Is it called Yours, Mine, and Ours? Or there's another one where there's 18 kids. There was one that upped the ante from this, and I can't remember what it was called.
What are you talking about?
Oh, I'm just saying there was another film that upped the ante, not in this franchise, but like it came out afterwards where there was like 16 or 18 kids in it instead of 12. It was just the same film again, but they had even more kids.
Yeah, but that's why the interesting thing about this movie isn't the number of kids. That's a fucking pun. Cheaper by the dozen. What does that even mean? What does that mean?
It means that they haven't got much money because Steve Martin it works at a smaller college, you know, as the football coach. But then when he goes to the bigger college, he gets more money. They're sort of like more expensive by the dozen. Do you know what I mean? But then because they decide family's more important than money at the end, then they're back to being cheaper by the dozen again. And the guy from Smallville's pretty happy.
But they stay in their massive house. It's not cheaper by the dozen.
It's kids sort of unclear, isn't it, if they stay in their house or
it's not unclear. They stay in the same massive house.
So they don't move back to their favourite place. They just stay.
Yeah.
But he just quits his job.
Yeah.
Even though the problem is that it was too much when she was away. But she's back.
She's back, and then she said, 12's our number. That's how many job offers Tom passed over to get the job that was just right.
Right.
What job? What are you talking about? Ooh, 12 is the number of times that we had sex last week. 12's the number of times that I've thought about fucking someone else. 12's the number of times that I wish I'd fucking turned this movie off. 12's the number of times I want to blow my brains out.
Right.
Shut up.
12's the number of times I scratched my head over why Bonnie Hunt isn't a bigger actor.
12's the number of times it baffles me that you've not seen Parenthood, because it's such a phenomenal movie. It's 12's so
the, 12 is the definitely the number of times I'm going to have to listen to you say that until you forget about it and then stop saying it.
I just don't understand why you don't want to watch it.
Wait.
I always liked doing so. Somehow, it feels like going down the hill.
Should we play the box office game?
Oh, Christ, yeah, let's do that. Oh, this is an interesting one to play the box office game with, isn't it? Okay, I'm going to tell you, of course, that it came out December 28th, 2003. What do you think they're spending on a movie like this?
Well, I mean, it looks like shit, and it's all just shot in a house.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the budget's going to Steve Martin. Bonnie Hunt is going to pick up tuppence. Or is it one of those Sandler movies that has just one of those mega budgets? That's like one of those bafflingly mega budgets.
Well, it could be. I mean, remember last week, of course, we did one from the year 2000. And that one, you eventually ended up guessing, what did you guess? You started at 50, then you went to 40, and it was 55. They spent quite a lot of money on movies in these days, didn't they?
They did. I think, let's say, I mean, 40 million seems a lot for this. 40 million. 40 million?
It's 40 million, brackets estimated. Bingo, bingo, bongo. It was 2003, of course. So I think you good going with your gut there. Opening weekend, US and Canada. Now, remember, it's December 28th. Americans famously love going to the cinema, don't they, at Christmas or just after Christmas? What do you think a family movie like this can take on its opening weekend? Steve Martin, big name. Big concept, a lot of kids.
But Steve Martin doesn't open a film. What does this do?
Let me put this to you, right? There's not that many families that have loads and loads of kids, but any family that does have loads of kids is taking all their kids to see this movie. And that's a lot of tickets, seats, because of kids, you know?
But that's what I don't understand. Like, this movie really is for no one. Like, a kid doesn't want to see this movie, and a grown-up doesn't want to see this movie, and yet everyone ends up going to see this movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, oh, there's a bit where a frog falls in some scrambled egg.
Sure.
And the parents are going, oh, look, it's Steve Martin.
It is Steve Martin.
18 million?
Do you know what? It's not just Jumper territory, Adam. It's Jumper. It's Jumper specific. It makes $27.5 million on its opening weekend, this movie. That's nearly three quarters of the budget.
It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, people love Steve Martin, right? And they love wacky family caper movies around Christmas time. They probably put it through a little bit of Christmas in the trailer, and I don't know.
But, well, I mean, then they did. This film doesn't get in the cinema these days.
I wouldn't have thought so. I think this is, again, like, we talked about this last week, but I do feel as though Netflix just owns this sort of film now, right? Like, this is a straight-to-streaming kind of movie deal. I don't know. Maybe not.
There's quite a fun one called Yes Day with Jennifer Garner and... who's the guy? It's not Javier Bardem. Is it Javier Bardem?
Yes Day. Oh, no, Day.
It's not Javier Bardem. It's... Oh, he played
Edgar Ramirez.
Edgar Ramirez, that's yeah, the one.
And Jenna Ortega from 2021.
Yeah, and they go, it's Hijinks City.
A family comedy film directed by Miguel Arteta from a screenplay and screen story by Justin Marlon based on the children's book.
You know, Sean Levy, who directed this, is going to now direct a Star Wars movie.
Really?
He directed the Wolverine Deadpool movie.
Wow.
He is a nothing. He's got no directorial style whatsoever, and he's now just like... in. He's like pals with Ryan Reynolds. He's done the Deadpool movie and it's just dross. And he's going to get to do a Star Wars movie.
Pretty impressive. I mean, who'd have thought that Cheaper by the Dozen was on the pathway to Star Wars? They come from strange places though, don't they, these people? Okay, well, all that's left now is gross worldwide, Adam. Remember, it made $27.5 million on its opening weekend. What does the movie gross a worldwide?
Well, it's made... Buffo box office straight away. It's overperforming because Shanghai Noon, similar sort of budget, opened a lot weaker, ended up making 99.
Which was a big underperform, wasn't it, I think?
Big underperform. And this is probably, it's got that same broad appeal. And I said 150, so I'm going to say 100 for that. I'm going to say 150 for this. 150.
Not quite. It made $190 million.
Okay, yeah.
Pretty good. Not far.
I mean, for like, that's an insane amount of money for this.
You nailed the budget. You really nailed it. I mean, it makes more sense that they made Cheaper by the Dozen 2, doesn't it? And what a shame for them that there isn't a number that describes 13 other than 13.
I mean, a baker's dozen is 13.
Oh, they should have called it a baker's dozen.
They should have, shouldn't they? But that would have been too smart because thickos wouldn't have understood... it's time for the next feature where we pick next week's film.
Yes, please.
It's the pick next week's film feature.
Yes, it is.
This is the bit in the show where one of us runs down a list of five films that they forgot with a view to catching out the other one on a movie they forgot. It's Joe's turn now, and he's going to run down. If he doesn't get me in these five films, we're going to go to the communal list. Now, you can send us your communal list suggestions of movies. We've got such a big list. And you can email us at moviesyouforgot@gmail.com. You can also, as an aside, follow me on Letterboxd at Error of Ways. It's really fun over there. I love it. I'd love it if you followed me. But We've got something quite exciting brewing with the communal list. Can I say what we're brewing?
Sure.
For anyone who's downhearted about the idea that we've not looked at the communal list, me and Joe have packed away nigh on 80 episodes of this podcast. 80.
We've actually done quite a few more than that, but we've done 80 core episodes.
Canon. 80 plus, canon.
80 canon, plus some specials, so...
They don't count. No, canon. 80 canon. 80 canon. You know what 80's near?
82.
Everyone's favourite number, 100.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
Listener Adam Bannister sent an email, and it caught me. I didn't realise we'd done so many. He suggested something else, but he said, oh, you're nearing 100 episodes. You probably won't do a communal list for that, but you should do... And he suggested something else. I won't say what. And it immediately made me think, no, Adam. Not me, Adam Bannister.
Right, of the same name.
Of the same name, Adam of the same name. I think 100th episode is the perfect time to do our first communal list episode. Can you feel that excitement? Can you feel that ripple that's gone across the Matrix?
I can feel the disappointment of the best long-held joke of all time. the resistance to give them what they want.
That's Joe. That's all Joe. Joe's... I'm glad. I got his assent on WhatsApp. This is amazing. Because not only will we do... We'll do an episode where we go through the list. Everyone will get shouted out. If you've emailed in, you'll get a shout out, and we will rigorously and ruthlessly take the piss out of every single fucking suggestion you've made. And we'll whittle it down to maybe top 10, a top 10 movie you forgot communal list. And then we'll pick one. No, actually, no, we're just going to pick one. We'll do all 10.
We're going to watch all 10 films.
We'll do all 10.
Oh my
and
God.
From episode 100 to episode 110 will be all listener picks. That's what you're dealing with, guys.
I didn't sign this off.
Well, guess what? It's happening. Because there's no one's fucking rubbish, man. There's loads of great episodes on there. Because also, the best thing about the communal list is we both don't have to have seen them.
That is true, but...
Mate, just embrace it. This is it. This is going to be just 10 episodes of fun.
I might embrace it. I need time to think about whether that's a good idea for me or not. But I love that you're rolling with it. And I love that you think that you can just say, just embrace it and then I'll do it. That is good as well.
At the very least, guys, it'll be one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm hoping for 10. Maybe we'll split the difference at 5. That's what I'm saying. Like, send in your suggestions.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
you've
yeah.
never been this close
yeah.
to podcast immortality.
Right.
So anyway, Joe. That makes me think we're not going to get to the communal list before.
No. Well, if we do, then it'll be funny because, you know, then your big dreams of 10 will be dispelled. Okay, fine. Right, I've got 5 films for you here today, Adam. The first one I'm going to hit you with is Cheaper by the Dozen 2. That's just a joke. The first one I'm going to hit you with that I really hope you say yes to is Never Let Me Go. It's a lovely sci-fi.
I feel like I really want to veto it.
It's Kazuo Ishiguro.
It is. It's Alex Garland who wrote the script, who is... I'm a Garland guy.
You're a Garland guy. Okay, so does you being a Garland guy mean that you haven't forgot this?
Cut me and I bleed Garland.
Yeah.
But I have forgotten everything about this film, aside from the jumpers.
The jumpers?
Yeah, they wear lots of knitwear.
Right, okay. I was thinking, when you said jumpers, I was thinking about like the people who teleport in the Hayden Christensen movie. I genuinely was.
I've got the book.
Yeah?
Do you know where it is?
Is it in your house?
Yeah, in my house on my bookshelves.
You love having the book of the film that we're talking about. How about this? I could throw at you
a couple more. I haven't got a leg to stand on.
Right.
I just think it will be a very unlistened to episode. But yeah.
Of course, yeah.
It's plum.
I mainly picked it because it's a film I want to watch. Of my list, it's the one I want to watch the most. But I could throw you a couple more if you want, and we could always store Never Let Me Go for another time.
No, that's the kind of thing you do, and I'm bigger than that.